Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Red Hat. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
The Defense Intelligence Agency doesn't deal much with hardware like the armed services, but it has a supply chain for software and data and the infrastructure to support them. So it too must concern itself with cybersecurity and reliability of its supply chain. Artificial intelligence is coming into that effort. To learn more, I spoke with the DIA's Chief Technology Officer, Ramesh Menon. Maybe just give us an overview of the Defense Intelligence Agency and the scope of activities, because it's not an operational unit like the armed services, but it supports them. And just give us the quick view of the agency itself. Let's start there.
That's a very good question, Tom. So it's one of the intelligence agencies that acts as a bridge between DoD and IC. So we are a combat support agency and with authorities for both Title 10 and Title 50. The big thing that I would say is that we are in charge of the All Souls Foundational Military Intelligence, which means we get SIGINT from NSA, HUMINT from CIA, GEOINT from NGA, and we consolidate everything and provide the actionable guidance and reports to the president and policymaker on a daily basis. That's one big part of it. We are also the provider of the top secret classified network for the world. And that's at a broad level that I would say where we operate to ensure that we can provide actionable intelligence to our warfighters and policymakers to prevent strategic surprises to the country.
And I imagine just with everything going on in the world, there are two kind of hot wars going on. The level of activity must be really high now.
We do support, I mean, of course, whatever is publicly available, it's the same thing, because without the Congress approval, we cannot do anything. I mean, that's true for even standing up a new program, right? We have to go through the ODNI's DSIC process, right? It's the strategic investment planning guidance to do anything new. And once it gets into the portfolio, yes, things happen and move. And that's the big challenge for me as a CTO is how do I do these new things like artificial intelligence, quantum technologies? And I think I've been fairly successful in my first term as a CTO. I was able to establish DIA's AI strategy. In fact, earlier this week, General Barrier signed off on it and we'll be announcing that to the public, sharing at DOTUS Worldwide. And it was a great accomplishment from the team and the extended community. I had a lot of listening sessions with our J2 COCOMs, with our Intel service centers, with other IC agencies, with OSD CDAO, and really understand, right? When we create any strategy, it's about truly understanding from a stakeholder perspective, what is that they require and what are the gaps? And once you have a strategy, then I have to operationalize that strategy. How do you do that? How do you create underlying force structure, the organizational design, the processes? And technology is changing at a very rapid pace, especially what we have seen in the last 2 years, right? It's been 1 year since OpenAI launched GPT, ChatGPT, and it's been taking off at a very fast pace. So we really are trying to figure out the best scenarios for decision support, decision augmentation, and decision automation for human-machine and machine-machine teaming. And that would take a while and the underlying governance structure for it. So there are some mandates to stand up a centralized governance team that enables federated execution. So I'm also the chief AI officer for the agency. And one of the goals is to collaborate with both DoD and IC to ensure we put some guardrails. I mean, ultimately, technology is to help human beings, and we need to be controlling the technology, not the other way around.
Sure. And let's talk about the technology base a little bit that you're dealing with before we get into the AI and the supply chain issues. But it must be, again, being not an armed service, but in support of combat, you are almost a purely, in some sense, technologically, information technologically based outfit.
Yeah, of course. Technology, platforms, data, and algorithms is the future, in my opinion. If you think of like a key enablers for anybody, and it's not just a government thing, even in private sectors, the platform-based business models are evolving. And we need to truly leverage our core capabilities, partner with our industry partners and allies to ensure we reduce duplication, we collaborate, and we share information that will give us strategic advantage or intelligence advantage. And certain areas we do extremely good job, certain area is a cultural and technological change. And the underlying funding model is equally important. because getting a project funded is relatively easy. Creating a sustainable organizational capability needs a lot more thoughtful thinking and realigning what you have in terms of people, process, and technology. Some of the processes will change. You probably might have seen some of McKinsey's point of view on like 50, 60% of the processes that somebody's doing might be automated. So there is automation, which is the theme that's happening. There is human-machine augmentation that's happening, or augmenting human intelligence, right? Machines are augmenting human intelligence, not necessarily replacing, but it makes us do more with same. So there is great focus on productivity. And in the commercial side, with all the balance sheet reset due to inflation, this would take off much rapidly than what's happening in government. But as a technology leader, I want US government to lead and be ahead of these things and drive and shape and create underlying structures that will give us that strategic information advantage in the next decade or even further.
And what you say about the idea that funding models are important, it's easy to get funds, it's difficult, relatively easy to get funds, but it's more difficult to build that sustaining, as you put it, sustaining organizational capability. That means you have to be selective in what you decide to undertake, because knowing that you have a choice of things you could ask for funding, more difficult is making sure that that funding can be used in a way that's effective, because you need that capability built into the organization.
That is very, very, very true. And I would say that at least on the IC side, we do an extremely good job with that. At least with my experience with the strategic investment guidance and the SIG process, which gives us the FYDP money for 5 years, is very thoughtful. We have a lot of deliberations. I was on the expert panel evaluating those things, and we truly decide what is good for the country. And we give higher priorities to joint proposals. If five agencies want to do the same thing, that gets higher priority instead of giving some siloed shiny object to some one agency. So we do collaborate, and it forces us to collaborate, right? I would say this puts emphasis on the next generation of leaders. We not only need leaders who are smart, curious, open-minded, but we also need people who can collaborate with others. So we are truly stepping out of our little silos and doing the right thing for the country. And at least on the IC side, because we cannot shift much, right? There is a portfolio, and the ability to manage change in a large complex system is relatively small. So we have to look like maybe 5%. And even if I can do a good job of shifting the portfolio 5%, that's a great success.
And let's talk about the forthcoming AI strategy to the extent that you can. There is a DoD AI strategy, and now we've had for a couple of months a federal government-wide AI strategy, so you must have some conformance to those initiatives and those priorities. But what might we expect specifically for the IC community in AI and specifically for the DIA in what it is you're going to be coming out with?
Excellent question. So we started off with listening sessions. We listened to all our key stakeholders, and we had different pillars, five unique pillars against which we were looking at the capabilities, gaps, or what we are good at. The first is talent and skills. It is very important to upskill and cross-skill our people, because nobody is going to give us 10,000 new billets. That's not going to happen. So how do we upskill and cross-skill our people? Second is platforms and tools. Do we have the underlying digital platforms and the tools and processes to do this work? Do we have an MLOps capability? Do you have a model exchange? Do you have data sharing processes in place? Do you have underlying infrastructure for sharing that data? Because AI is nothing but extracting value from data for human-machine teaming and machine-machine teaming. Mm-hmm. That being said, and third is tradecraft. We provide these reports to our policymakers, warfighters, and senior leaders. And we want to make sure that information we provide complies to certain regulations like ICD 203. So we have instituted a quality assurance framework in our analysis team to ensure that whatever an analyst is producing complies to the ICD 203 framework. We are also looking at experimentation. How do we truly accelerate the speed and scale of innovation? How do we bring in younger, new generation of workforce into the government so we are an ideal mix of people who understand the complex system processes and people with that drive and passion for and with curiosity and innovation to create new capabilities. So it's a partly it's a human talent is a big part of it. And of course, the fifth pillar is partnerships. How do we operationalize our partnership? And our first priority is to operationalize with our 5i partners. So I think we have looked at it holistically from platforms, tools, skills, tradecraft, mission priorities, experimentation, and partnerships.
All right. And then what about the technology piece? I want to get into that a little bit more. You mentioned earlier that it's been a year since the generative came on the scene in a way that's mass produced, you might say. And at first there was a lot of skepticism about it. And then there was a phase almost of ridicule of it because of the things that it distorted. But now that I seem to sense an acceptance of where you can apply it in a way that makes sense and where to avoid applying it that it doesn't make sense. Where are you with generative and what are some of the use cases perhaps for a technology like that?
So there are many, many scenarios. Obviously, the easier one is learning. How do we have a better human-machine teaming for us to constantly learn and improve our skills? There are many areas, although I also want to caution on the areas where there are gaps, like concern about hallucination, concerns about data privacy, role of synthetic data. I mean, everybody has slightly different ways, but again, I agree, AI is here to stay. We will all have to use it in some form or other. And we are making sure that we have appropriate guardrails as defined in the recent White House executive order for safe and secure AI. So safety is very important. We should be managing our machines and not the other way around.
Ramesh Menon, Chief Technology Officer of the Defense Intelligence Agency. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Are you ready to uncover the secrets behind empowering the next generation of intelligence community professionals? Red Hat has years of experience helping agencies like yours modernize and propel their workforce, whether through automation or training. We equip our customers within the community with the tools they need to enhance their ability to safeguard national interests. Red Hat is committed to providing you with a secure and compliant environment. Let's talk about moving your mission forward. Learn more at red.ht/intelligence.
Welcome back to our interview with Ramesh Menon, the Chief Technology Officer of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Our topic is supply chain security and assurance and how to achieve it with artificial intelligence. With respect to application development and software, which is the heart of so much of what you do is software, let's discuss the supply chain, the open source library usage, and all of that in the context of AI, and how can AI help with supply chain assurance, especially, I mean, open source is in the IC, no less than it is in other domains.
It's a very important topic. I would say assurance of data and cybersecurity is very critical. We do have a scrim process. How do we evolve that into the software supply chain with the underlying guidance from ISO 27036 or NIST 800-213, which will provide the foundational capabilities and make sure our procurement is driven by data-driven decisions, including the software supply chain. Now, it's not easy, right? It's very complex, and which is the reason why we get many of the zero-day vulnerabilities. It's down to the leadership and
hiring software or having software developed or having software developed in-house by the DIA or government staff. I guess there's some of that going on. I guess you do all three, maybe buy commercial products, have custom development done by contractors, and to some degree, there's probably programming done by government billets, if you will. How does the AI in service of supply chain management apply in those different areas? And how do you make sure industry is okay with it? And that they are giving you what you need in terms of what the AI is revealing about supply chain issues and what might be buried in software.
Yeah, it's an evolving area. And I did read somewhere that somebody's even trying to do that for LLMs as this evolves. So it is a growing area. We obviously do any effort based on the mission requirements. It's not based on whether it is staff or contractor or industry. That's not the way we make decisions. The decisions are truly driven by the national security priorities and in support of executing those priorities as requested by DNI or SecDef and by the director. We, as part of execution, if there are certain capability gaps, we may have to procure that capability, we may have to build that capability, or we may have to acquire that capability. So there are, it's not the same answer for every single agency. Everybody's portfolio is slightly different. The underlying software stack is different, but there are certain foundational governance processes we all have to follow, like having clear requirements, what and why, the underlying architecture. Have you made the design trade-off? What are the architectural decisions you're making? How does it integrate with your operating environment? So we have to look at all those things, and risk obviously is a big factor. I mean, within at least DoD and IC, a lot of decisions are based on risk-based, and we need to go in with our eyes and ears wide open to truly understand what we are getting into and manage that risk. I mean, risk can never be eliminated. There is risk in everything, but do we understand what we have and try to minimize and manage it, because ultimately it's about the mission outcome and mission goals. So we are truly focused on providing that exceptional high quality intelligence to our consumers.
And so when you look at AI, there's really two ways to apply it. I'm simplifying, but one is applying it to the data that is coming in as the intelligence gathering, the signal intelligence, the human intelligence, the machine intelligence. You mentioned coming in from various agencies that you integrate and create intelligence products out of. And so AI can help in creating those intelligence products by seeing things perhaps in the data that people couldn't see readily themselves, given the volume. The other area is in, as I mentioned earlier, the software development and the operational side of creating the tools you need in support of the mission. And so maybe comment on how you develop AI products or AI capabilities in each of those two domains. One, the operation of the agency in service of the mission, and two, in operation of tool development that lead to the enablement of mission support. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And the way I look at these things is, one, we need that underlying foundational capability. Like, do we have the underlying digital platform to do this work? Do you have MLOps? Can I extract the data, what I get, create an AI model, use that model into an application, and then deploy that application wherever it needs to be deployed? And that whole tool chain automation is MLOps. So step one is to make sure every federal agency has a solid MLOps pipeline. Now, that alone is not enough, because what would happen then? You have hundreds of applications using this process similar to DevSecOps, but we don't have, how do we support reuse? And the concept of model exchange is a very important concept. Where do we create our certified gold models? Because it went through all the data validation, tagging, training, and that trained AI model can be reused by multiple applications. So having a model exchange is very important, and it should be a platform capability. So we are not throwing away the hard work of the people here. And going down the lane, it will become very, very strategic asset because of the scope and scale of the work we do across different domains. These model exchanges, we can, of course, constantly do domain adaptation. We can do multiple things with this. So having a model exchange and MLOps, I would say, is foundational, irrespective of the tools what you're developing for different purposes, right? Yes, we always will have those kind of requirements, but I would treat them like a project. Our underlying digital platform will support multiple types of projects, but there are also considerations on classification. The way we develop something on an unclassified system is very different on the way we develop on a classified system. So that depends on the type of data. If I'm training a model with a classified data, my model automatically becomes classified. That means it has to be on the high side. I cannot do it on low side. I cannot take my classified data and send it out to any vendor on unclassified system. That's not how we do the national security work. So there are certain cultural aspects of it. Yes, vendors will tell We can do it on your website, but we need to make sure that we account for the risks and security and comply to all the existing regulations, which is done with a good purpose and to reduce and manage the risk.
And getting back to the model exchange, in some ways, you could almost call it a model library, because maybe it's a way of maintaining the gold version, if you will, of that model. Because in operation, models can create drift from the intended results as different data gets fed to it. So can the model exchange not only help you share the output of the operations, but also make sure that you have a, let's say, snap to version of a model when you can sense drift in operational use of a given model?
That is very true, especially as we start getting into disconnected operations where you're not even connected to a command and control node. We need constant closed loop control system. Learning and reasoning nowadays can happen anywhere. So given the advances in technology, it is very important to ensure we have a closed loop system. I might have trained a model to do X, and once it's deployed, it has learned by itself certain new things which are not even in my training repository. So it's very important to constantly retrain and have that closed loop control system and ensure that. And that is one of the functions of AI governance. And this is a new area. As we start establishing this AI centralized governance team, somebody can come and ask me, tell me all the AI models you deployed. So if I look at my model exchange, I should be able to say that. That is not there for most people, but that is something we're trying to get to. That's an aspirational goal from AI governance.
And just a detail question, getting to the supply chain issue. Everybody's talking about the receipt of software bills of material, SBOMs. And, you know, the SBOM itself can be a gigantic electronic artifact that, great, you have it, but what do you do with this haystack? Are you finding that AI, or are you planning for AI to be applied to the understanding of the SBOM pursuant to better security and better reliance?
It's a good use case, in my opinion. What you mentioned is very important, although I'll have to also make sure it is compliant to the NIST 800-213 guidance and regulation. I mean, yes, and this is where creativity and outside-in innovation models work, right? What you mentioned absolutely is an exceptionally good use case to reducing the SBOM risks. If somebody did some patch, and I don't know, because typically procurement happens and they lose track of what happens with the vendor software. How do we have real-time actionable intelligence or risk profile of the SBOM itself? And how do you notify the underlying systems that, hey, there is a zero day in this software, well, put a patch or pull it out? Because ultimately, it's about operational risk. And risk can be managed in many ways. I would definitely assume that it is a good use case, although we have not explored that into further details.
Ramesh Menon, Chief Technology Officer of the Defense Intelligence Agency. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Red Hat on Federal News Network.
Are you ready to uncover the secrets behind empowering the next generation of intelligence community professionals? Red Hat has years of experience helping agencies like yours modernize and propel their workforce. Whether through automation or training, we equip our customers within the community with the tools they need to enhance their ability to safeguard national interests. Red Hat is committed to providing you with a secure and compliant environment. Let's talk about moving your mission forward. Learn more at red.ht/intelligence.